afternoon, and welcome to a fun-filled two-hour program. You're joining We the People Radio. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Ooh, are you ever?
Oh, am I? Mic check. I get first seat today.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's the end of that. There goes my volume.
Yeah, turn your volume down.
Okay, well, I'm still
Bob Cundiff.
I'm Bob Martin.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
We had the girly man Bill there for a second.
Yeah.
It's a little too...
So how's it all going with the new... with our summer here and everything? I mean, it just went winter to summer.
Last week it was nice and lovely and...
Snow in the mountains.
Yeah. And today I saw a chihuahua being carried on a walk. You know it's hot.
You know it's hot.
When you got to carry your chihuahua. I'm like, don't they come from Mexico? Aren't
chihuahua
they supposed
down.
To be good at
the heat? Yeah, they're supposed to be good to heat.
Yeah, well,
no.
They're not.
Yeah, they're not.
If you're getting them to live in Reading, you're blowing it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, so...
What are we talking? Hey, we got a good show today, don't we?
Yeah, we have two different things. I don't know. Some people like it when we have two different things and some don't. So for those of you who do like it when we change it up in both hours, you are going to love it today. It's going to be fantastic for you. So the first hour, we have Lawrence Schaumburn on, and let's just talk about the great title of this program.
Okay, talk about it.
Has fake news spread to the judiciary?
Huh.
Because I think that's like a giant yes. Yeah. I'm just going to spoiler alert that. I think it's a yes. And then second hour, we have Peter Cove on. Peter Cove has written a book called Poor No More, Rethinking Dependency and the War on Poverty.
Be careful the way you say that.
What?
Poor No More.
I know. That is kind of a trick title there.
Yeah.
Poor No More.
There
three
you go.
Words.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. And so we're going to talk about two different things that I think people care a lot about right now. And if they don't, they should.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about any of the dopey stuff.
Well, the whole fake news thing is
burying us
over the top right now. Everybody's talking about that.
Yeah, I guess we should say the word Russia just so we could be, popular.
Well, there was a Russian in here right when I walked in. I had to kick him out.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's trying to take over the radio show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say anything to him, though.
Was he the guy who left the giant sack of pot in the grocery store parking lot?
That could have been a Russian conspiracy. It was true. That was not fake news.
I will check out
the Facebook page.
Seriously,
there.
I will post this online because yesterday we went to the grocery store, just minding our own beeswax, and we looked over and it looked like, it's rodeo week, okay? So it looked like maybe somebody parked out way out in the parking lot and like shoveled out their horse trailer.
Well, it looked like an elephant had maybe done something.
It looked
bad
a lot
there.
Like that
big
too.
Pile.
And so, but there was a security guard standing near it, and we thought, well, what the heck is that?
Didn't want anybody to step in the poop.
So anyway, we went over, and of course we were curious, and this is like 7 o'clock at night. And the closer we got, the more we realized it was a giant pile of pot.
Yeah.
In the parking lot.
Somebody spent a lot. It was good-looking pot, too. That's what they tell me. I wouldn't have any way of really knowing it for a fact, but giant buds. I mean, it was a pile.
It was kind of funny.
It was a big pile.
Only in California.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will post that, and it is blowing up on Facebook. I tell you what, if you really want to get people involved in a Facebook post, post a giant pile of pot with a security guard standing next to it. I had no idea that would be that popular. Let's see... 2,841 shares since last night about 7:30.
Yeah.
Now I put
smoke weed every day.
Nice, Bob.
Yeah.
So I put something on here that you put all these things on here that are important. But what is the post that like takes off and goes crazy? Yeah, the one with the big pile.
The one with the big pile of hot.
All right. So now that we've aired that, we are going to find out about fake news spreading to the judiciary, because you know what? I think everybody's a little frustrated on that front. And you have heard Lawrence Schaumburn before, because he's been with us in it's been a few months ago. Anyway, I had the date right there and then I lost it. So he has done all sorts of things, and the most recent thing that you have heard from him on our program regarding is the case. It was a California case, and I had such a nice little thing I was going to read for you, Lawrence. Ugh, forget it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, for God's sake. It was about class action lawsuit abuse. There, that's just the ugly way of doing it. Class action lawsuit abuse. And we all know because we've all done those class action things. You send it in, and then you get 45 cents back. And so he's been really dogging them on that, getting that straightened out. So I will link those shows, but that is not our topic today. So
our topic, though, is more serious even than the last one.
Imagine that. It seems like it just gets
The judiciary
deeper and deeper and deeper.
You know, basically giving credence to fake news and using that in their rulings is a frightening proposition, and I think that's where we're at today.
Hey,
well, if I can tell you about my case a little bit, it astounds me. It's, I could say a funny thing happened to me on the way to the California Supreme Court. I was involved in a class action which had to do with whether or not the class would be notified that the lawyers were seeking $9 million in fees from the class's recovery and whether they'd be given the ability to object to it. And I had a lower court opinion which said, no, the class members didn't have to get notice. I took it to the California Court of Appeal, which is the second highest court in the state of California, and that's where this whole, for lack of a better term, fake news came up. Because what happened was the facts and law that I argued to the Court of Appeals had nothing to do with the opinion that they issued. And if I can be more specific, one of the issues in my case was whether the class members had notice. Both myself, class counsel, and the defendants agreed the class hadn't gotten notice. They said they weren't entitled to notice. I said they were. The Court of Appeal changed the facts to say that class members were aware of the fee. On the question of the law to be applied, the Court of Appeals cited a case which said class members need not have notice. That was what they put in the opinion. If you read the actual case they relied on, the case said class members don't have to receive notice, but then the very next sentence said, except in the following case, which was applied to my case. So the court just dropped off the except for part of the decision. Then I cited a United States Supreme Court case, which said class members had to receive notice. This Court of Appeals said that the Supreme Court of the United States was in dispute on this issue because of another case, but the Supreme Court case that I relied on, that they cited, actually said there is no dispute on this issue.
Wow.
So to bring this all back home, you have the second highest court in the state, which you could say is antagonistic to the concept of the rule of law, that if the facts of the case they're presented with are not the facts that allow them to make the holding they want, they just change the facts. And if the law that is relevant to the issue is not the law they want, they either neglect to read parts of the opinion that they're relying on, or they claim a dispute which doesn't exist. It seems to me it's very close to living under tyranny. And not only what I've told you, you could understand maybe if one judge in a superior court someplace, but this was a three-judge panel of appellate lawyers out of a major city willing to have this opinion become precedent suggests to me that there is a level of imperial attitude that these judges have that's even more serious than, you know, Obamacare or problems with Trump, that these judges are establishing under the name of the rule of law a tyranny in which what they want becomes the rules regardless of the facts.
Well, Lawrence, why are they doing this? I mean, what is the benefit? Obviously, they're being influenced by somebody. I don't know if it's the lawyers or the lobby. Why are they ruling this way? And why are they not taking into account the actual facts in the case?
Well, I thought about this long and deeply, and I have to throw out sort of a multifaceted answer, okay? First of all, I think that they don't have a high authority. There's no higher authority that's going to wrap them or they're going to suffer any consequence if they make up the facts to a case or misuse the law. As long as the way they come out in the case is the way the prevailing culture wants them to come out, or even not even the prevailing culture, but maybe their own self-interest. In my case, you could say the fewer appeals by class members and class actions, the better. So if we come out with a ruling that restricts appeals, no one's going to really care. The court system is happier, fewer appeals. The plaintiff's lawyers, defendant's lawyers are happier, fewer appeals. And the only person's acts who's being gored are these unnamed class members. And one thing I thought about, you remember this famous quote by this woman who said, paying taxes is for the little people? You remember that quote?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't think of her name right now, but it seems to me that the way the judges look at it is that we're sort of the little people, and since whatever decision they make is the decision, how they get there is of less importance.
Sure.
So
it was Leona Helmsley.
Yes, exactly. Leona Helmsley.
So is this ruling, can it be appealed? I mean, can you take it like to the Supreme Court?
Well, I am before now the California Supreme Court, but I don't know. I mean, this is kind of like I feel that I've been privy to something that most people just don't know about. I'm just thinking now, for example, you know, they've just appointed this ex-FBI Director Mueller, and they describe him, at least in the article that I read, that he's the kind of guy who says, follow the facts, apply the applicable law, and don't be swayed by political or outside references. But I see that the opposite is really true, that these kind of statements, you know, he's a straight shooter, he goes by the facts, goes by the law, that's just for the consumption of the little people. And what's really going on is this, what's becoming more and more of a totalitarian system where getting the answer that the powers that be want is important, and you just say rules and facts and don't be swayed, but people who are in the system know that that's not true.
We need to take a break, Lawrence, but I want to stay on this vein when we come back, because I heard a story the other day that now Mueller is under fire because he was friends with Comey, so he needs to recuse himself. Everybody needs to recuse themselves.
I thought you were going to say he likes some kind of Russian food or something.
No, he does know a few Russian words.
Restaurant. He ate at a Russian restaurant. He's tainted.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
All right, we'll be back.
With our guest, Lawrence Schönbrunn. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
But good. about them.
A misunderstanding. So welcome back. We are here with Lawrence Schombrin. He is a nationally recognized authority on the issue of reasonableness of attorney's fees awarded in class actions. He's appeared on behalf of unnamed class members in approximately 200 class actions throughout the United States. He's a New York City native, now lives in Northern California. Huh, imagine that. Oh. I grew up in Connecticut, and I live in Northern California. Let's see, what are we going to call it? We're going to call it briskness, because rude sounds bad. We're going to come out here to the West, and we're going to speed these people up, aren't we, Lawrence?
Oh, yes.
Get them cracking. Okay, so this isn't just one judge that, you know, kind of, because we hear about those cases all the time, right? One judge makes a nutty ruling. This is actually really a lot worse, because he got everybody to go, you know, they all went together, I guess.
Yes, you've got an appellate court, the second highest court in the state, and you've got three judges. It can't be just an errant judge. It has to be some kind of formalized, understood process that the judiciary is involved and engaged in.
And so if they make crazy rulings, really, is there no recourse? I mean, if we get these judges that just kind of think they can cut their own path, you know, I mean...
It's horrible to say, but, you know, we're in a revolutionary situation in this country. I think you well know it. Conservatives really know it. And I don't think we have to look at what other... You look at Venezuela. You look at what other countries go through, and... It's sad to say, I don't want to think about it, but I don't see this situation righting itself. I just, the left has become more entrenched. They're painting Trump as a Hitler and the people who voted for him as racists. So I think this is a fight to the finish, unfortunately.
Kind of for what direction we go. Do we follow law and order, or... And it was interesting because I did see the headline that Tim Allen got booted off of whatever network he was on because he, you know, offended somebody. And we were watching that this morning. Bill had that clip up. That he offended the he, she, you know, on the fence people or whatever. All that stuff. And
well, he defended free speech. He defended
God,
the right to bear arms. I mean, and he didn't really offend it. He just basically said, this is what I believe.
Right.
And that was enough to boot him.
You're out.
It's not popular opinion.
So we're intolerant on TV, even with a comedian.
Well, that's not necessarily true either. It depends what side the jokes
true.
Are on.
I should preface that. And now if the court is following suit and not basing decisions. So what's your recourse as a guy that's tangled up in this? What is your recourse with this?
I can hope that the Supreme Court is going to comment on what the Court of Appeals did. But my sad experience is that, you remember, I appeared before the Supreme Court of California about a year ago, and they brushed all my arguments about these excessive attorney's fees under the rug, and they refused to deal with them. So I think a Supreme Court, I'm guessing, would do a less shabby job of writing the opinion. But in the last analysis, I think all these courts are in cahoots. They're in the same liberal wagon who view conservatives, you know, Hillary Clinton called us deplorables. Trump is a Hitler. We're all racists. And I think people, I can see how people of the left, with those kind of statements being made about us, don't feel that we're entitled to any respect or humanity, that we're evil and our opinions are evil, and anything you can do to combat evil is considered acceptable in modern liberalism.
Now, see, you, let's see, you got your law degree in 1969, so you've been at this a while. Have you seen this really take a turn, or has this been like, you know, the long slippery slope?
Well, I would say the long, I mean, let me just say, what the story I'm telling you now, even as I tell you, I can't believe it, at the Court of Appeals of the state of California level. And I believe if you sat down with a bunch of lawyers and told them this is the way a case was being handled, I think they wouldn't believe it. And that's why this is so startling. But has it been a slow drip and a slow process? I would say yes. There's, you know, the one problem is, you know, in a divorce case, in a car accident case, it doesn't necessarily cut across the entire judiciary. You could be involved with cases where these issues might not raise themselves. It's only in these issues that either involve social policy or involve powerful financial interests. And the class action is a case, it's an ideal for them. Powerful financial interests on one side, plaintiffs, defendants, the judiciary, all on one side, and the other side, you know, common people who have no power. So it's ideal for them to exercise this power, you know, against the overall interests of the people, using the rule of law, but undermining the rule of law in every sentence.
Do you think, I hear from people all the time that they think that these lifetime appointments and some of how we get our judges on the bench, you know, different courts, they get there different ways, but they said that, I've heard a lot of people say we need to look at how that's done because that could change it. What do you think about that?
Well, I would say it's kind of a Band-Aid, a palliative. The underlying problem is liberalism. That's the underlying
problem.
Oh,
no, we have to fix that first.
Okay, we have to end this interview at this point. It's, you've absolutely crossed the line here.
We
just don't speak that frankly.
Good job, Bill. That's funny. No, I mean, I we're totally with you. It's just that...
I mean, I don't want to be... You know, I was told not to be pessimistic. And I don't want to be pessimistic.
No, just be factual.
I could say I'm optimistic to the extent that I'm able to talk about this and that all of us conservatives know this on one degree or another. My point is that with this level of cynicism by the judiciary, I almost, you know, to me this equates to the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, we're at sort of Roman Empire levels.
Well, you do. When the judiciary can write the rule, or actually, yeah, rewrite the rules and rewrite the laws at their own discretion, we seriously do have a problem because there really is no way to swiftly fix that problem. I mean, until these judges are... either retire or voted out, we're gonna continue to have to deal with this. Is there any other answer?
Well, I mean, I the worst part of this, I think these judges believe they're doing the right thing. That's the scary part.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
They don't see themselves as evil. They don't see themselves as perverting the law, undermining. They feel they would argue maybe, you know, in the last analysis, it's their opinion that matters, not how they reason it out, and that they're doing this for the good of the people, for the good of the system.
For the little guys. Yeah, that's pretty scary.
That's doubly hard to uproot.
Yeah, an ideological thing is always... I'd like to ask you, when we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you, when the judge issue comes onto the ballot, I'd love your opinion on how you research. Maybe we could give people some ideas. I know not all judges are there by the vote of the citizenry, but a lot of them are. And most people just literally, you know, check the box because they have no clue and don't know how to research it. So we'd like to hear from you on that. You are listening to We the People. We are here with Lawrence Schombrun. We spoke with him last May and last August, actually, on this topic. So we're sort of coming in late in the movie. If you'd like the background information, just go to the website and you can catch up. That, again, is wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. The old county judge that held a grudge. We used to joke about that stuff.
Yeah.
Not anymore. So, these judges, Lawrence, that kind of, you know, we see them on our ballot. Nobody really knows how you become a circuit guy. If you're nobody knows how the judiciary really works. And if you do out there, I'm very sorry I offended you. Okay, most people don't know. What's the best way for them to research before they vote?
Well, I have difficulty also. I mean, typically, it's not like you can read the opinions of judges. You may, I'm thinking in Berkeley, California, there was this judge, I remember, with the shooting of the guy at the BART station. And this guy, Jacobson, as I remember his name, wrote a very intemperate opinion. And you sort of, if you remember that, then if this guy's name comes up again. But a typical judge, you're not going to know, you know, you can, but I think the best way is kind of who supports the judge. Don't in the ballots, I think they put the names of people who they want to put forward as supporting a particular judge. But in terms of reading opinions and seeing, you know, who's more willing to follow the law and follow the facts, and as opposed to being political and ideological, there is no simple way.
Yeah, I've found that before, and a lot of times, you know, vote for one and there's only one. So,
yes.
You know, it isn't.
Because people, I think, are people feel these issues are so remote to them and have such little power that people don't become involved in the issue of the judges. They just experience these sort of diktats from on high, and they either, you know, evade, avoid, or follow.
Sure.
That's sort of what your marching orders are, sad to say.
Well, and there's all this obsession with the legislature and the executive branch, whether you're at the federal or the state level. So that's really what's in the news, and that's what the left seizes on when, you know, when they want to make a big deal of something. Those two branches of government are kind of at the forefront, while the judiciary just churns away in the background. But there's some discussion about splitting up the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah, is that even possible?
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, of course they could do it. I mean, Trump, sort of in one of his statements, I think, say he was interested in doing it, but these things happen so slowly, you know. There's so much between inertia and the control by the left of these institutions. I don't see that. I mean, I think one can't be sanguine about this situation. I mean, I know in Berkeley, if you've been reading about the free speech issue in Berkeley, and
you mean the lack
now,
of free speech? Yeah,
lack. Yes, I mean it reminds me, sad to say, of you. I'm just reading a book about Nazi Germany, about an ambassador who was telling the story that American citizens were regularly coming to the embassy complaining that they were being beaten up by Nazis if there was a flag, Nazi flag in the street, and they didn't, you know, raise their hand up with the Nazi salute. They were being beaten, just common citizens, and they were saying the police wouldn't become involved. And to me, there are shades of this in Berkeley right now, where the police allow these fascists with masks to attack Trump demonstrators, and they don't do anything about it. And, well, people do care, I would say, but still, the prevailing ethos is permitting it. So I think there's a long road down to ruin that we're on. And, I mean, I think these are the kind of forefront issues that give you an inkling as to what might happen.
Lawrence, I got a question for you. If, say this case were to go to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, get overturned, and these judges are now basically overruled. If a panel of judges is consistently overruled in the U.S. Supreme Court, is there any
happen?
Yeah, is there any consequence to that? I mean, do these judges have to answer to anybody?
No, because that's true of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, yeah.
That supposedly is more routinely overruled by the U.S. Supreme Court than any other circuit in the country. But I believe, my belief, that they wear that as a badge of honor. That they are these leftists who have these left-leaning liberal ideas, and they're just more progressive than the than the conservative United States Supreme Court. So I think they don't see this as a problem. This is a badge of honor to them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Unfortunately, I think they do think that, but it all boils down to the electorate. If they see these judges being overturned time and time and time again, I guess our only recourse is to not vote for them when their term is up. Or is that a lifetime position? The Ninth Circuit?
No, I think those are lifetime positions. But you know, the thing is, the people of the country did something so incredible in this last election.
Oh, absolutely.
Where they rejected basically both political parties. They rejected the influence of Hollywood, rejected the influence of Wall Street, rejected the influence of the media, and put this guy Trump into power and gave a big long shot to Bernie Sanders. I mean, I don't know how much more short of open revolt that the citizens of the country could do to send the message.
Well, I think the next big message is the midterms. I think if that goes the same way, that would be a real statement on behalf of the electorate that they're just done with this liberal.
Yeah, it just keeps rolling a little farther.
Yeah, they're just tired of it.
Yeah, but I think our position, and I may be stepping on your toes. I don't know exactly how you feel, but
that's okay. You
I
can
think
for us.
That our position, we should have someone more worthy than President Trump to put forward these ideas. I understand why only someone like him could have succeeded, but I believe our positions and arguments deserve a worthier spokesperson than President Trump. And I think he's in deep problem right now.
Well, I think he is. I think he's in deep trouble right now too. However, I think it's going to take somebody like him to bring these issues to the forefront, and then it's going to be up to the people, up to the rest of the system to make the change that people are screaming for. Because if somebody at the top doesn't bring this up and bring it to the forefront and argue these points, we're going to continue down this.
Well, if we don't put some of this, like what you're seeing in Berkeley, if some of that doesn't get put back in the box, I mean, if that's allowed to continue,
that's not saying that people don't have the right to protest, but
not with masks on when they burn things down.
No, I don't believe you have the right to protest with a mask and a baseball bat. That's where you cross the line, and if there's no consequence or prosecution when you act that way, our rule of law is toast. I mean,
I think when that's the message that I'm trying to bring, I think we're there. It seems that we're there. I don't like to say it, but as much as I can say to the general public, this is my experience in this case, and there are so many factors of it that suggest that we're very far along the path to tyranny, a lot closer than we want to think.
Yeah, when the judiciary is, because that really is, where you hold the line, I guess. So we can't even count on them to actually use the rule of law. What were you thinking about the Supreme Court pick while we're kind of at it? Did you like that guy, Gorsuch?
He's better than what Hillary Clinton would have appointed.
Yeah, okay.
I really don't know enough about him to say, but certainly it's a better pick than Hillary Clinton, better than Kagan or Ruth Bader Ginsburg or that Sotomayor. I mean, it's a better appointment than them for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
But really save the republic? That's the question, and I don't know that he'll save the republic.
Now, what do you think? What do you think about was it Mueller, the FBI guy? I mean, he does have a long history.
What I would say about Mueller, do you remember what they said about Comey?
Yep.
If you remember, they said the exact same
things
about Comey that they're now saying about Mueller. Straight shooter, follows the law, will follow the facts where it leads them. So I don't think you can get that high up in politics. I think they're just saying this as pablum to the masses to make them believe that this guy is somehow going to be a neutral.
I don't know if he doesn't, find what they want him to find or make the decisions he wants, then he's going to be a bad guy, too. I mean, he'll have to go under the bus if he doesn't.
Well, he's already under fire because he was friends with Comey, supposedly. And I mean, I just don't see the two sides agreeing on anything right now.
We can't even agree to disagree.
No, we can't. And I guess that's just really, to me, a really dangerous place to be when you have such a divide in Washington, D.C., and until the voters make a clear cut choice one way or the other, and I think we really do need a two-party system. I think a three-party system's a loser, but a two-party system. But when they operate like this, nobody wins. Nobody wins, and I think that's where we are right now. We're like in gridlock right now.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, it's
and
a...
I think,
it's kind of like that old, remember, what was that old game, Red Rover? Yeah. Everybody holds arms and the other guys all rush him, and it just depends to see if the line breaks.
So where do you see the solution?
Well, I see that we have to take a break. Oh. So you quit asking Lawrence more questions all because right. We have to take a really quick break. you're luring him in
all
to
right.
answer
when we come
more
back,
questions.
We're going to talk about solutions.
Bill's got more questions for you, Lawrence.
We'll
be back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I actually forgot that had anything to do about court. That's funny.
Back in the day.
All right, so we have Todd called in during the break, and he has a question for you, Lawrence.
Okay.
Hit it, Todd.
Yeah, good morning. Or afternoon.
afternoon.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering if you would ask your guest. He'd made a comment earlier.
Todd, we need you to speak up, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Much. There you go.
Okay. Your guest made a comment earlier in the discussion that he thought Trump was in deep trouble. And I was just wondering if we could have him expand a little bit what his thought process that led him to that conclusion.
Nice. We can do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll take your answer in the air, okay?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, let's just say a preface. I think this trouble is of his own making. But this is what I see. I see, first of all, the fact that this a special prosecutor or whatever he is not limited to Russia and this Russia accusation, but as I understand it, it also includes sort of any other matter that this prosecutor deems worthy of investigating. And with a man that, let's say, has done as many things as Trump has done, I don't see them not being able to get him for something. Well, and then I must admit, I'm surprised that he would, if this is again true, that he asks the vice president and the attorney general to leave the room and tells the FBI director or asks him to sort of, if this is true, let's kind of put this Flynn investigation to rest. And then he says that he's happy with the special prosecutor, but let's get this over with quickly. I think all these things point, and the fact that I think the Republicans, with some justification, have just gotten tired of all the chaos that he's creating, these tweets, these stupid arguments, theories about the Civil War, and he just, the guy, a lot of these qualities that he exhibited during the campaign, he seems unable to control. So I just think they're going to get, this establishment, he hasn't been smart, and this establishment is going to get him.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with what you're saying there. I think he has said a lot of things that...
Unforced errors, we call them.
Yeah, I think he should have maybe just not said them. But on the other hand, a lot of what is being reported, and I would almost venture to say the majority of what's being reported.
Back to the title of the show, right?
And just fake fixated news on is not true. And they throw stuff out. The other day I listened to a news broadcast that first said, well, we can't substantiate this statement. But how does that make you feel? And so then they have a big conversation on how something that possibly isn't even true, how does that make you feel? Who cares? Who cares how something like that makes me feel or anybody feel if it's not a substantiated fact?
We could probably benefit society greatly if we took the news and, you know, quote the news, and rolled it back to several hours per day. Instead of, 5,000 channels 24/7.
Yeah,
Because they got to do something to fill up the airtime.
They talk about things that are stories that have an anonymous source, and then they're just fixated on it. If they don't have the facts, I don't really believe they have any business reporting it. It's really muddying the waters, and it is making job very difficult.
Sure. There's a lot going on back there, despite all of this, that just isn't being reported.
Well, they don't report on that.
Right, which is fine, but there's still a lot going on that's good, that's actually getting done. So I guess while these guys, it's almost like, hey, look over here. I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. It's hard to say.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. My response to you would be, yes, there's a lot of things that aren't true. Unfortunately, there are a lot of things that seem to be true that don't further the conservative message, that hurt the conservative message. And I would say to you, I mean, remember how Trump said how smart he was? I mean, this has been a given. The news is owned by the left.
Yep.
It's been a given for decades. I mean, rather than complain about it, you got to deal with it smartly.
Yeah.
And he hasn't dealt with it smartly.
No, he's dealt with it in his own way, I agree 100%, is not.
Well, the bad part is if you shoot from the hip, then almost anything attributed to you could be true. And that actually does not play in his favor. We are down to the last 20 seconds here, Lawrence, and it's been really nice catching up with you.
I agree. Feeling is mutual. It's always nice to speak with both of you, and I thank you very much for having me to try to get this message out what's going on in the courts.
Yeah, keep us posted on what happens with this, okay?
Okay.
Because we're not following the courts, obviously, and if there are things you think our listeners need to know, please get a hold of us, all right?
I certainly will.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
That has been Lawrence Schonbrunn. And you can find all the information about him on our website, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be back to talk with Peter Cove and his book, Poor No More.
Shasta Redding.